Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe.
Here with Tanvi Madan, the director of the India Project at the Brookings Institution. And we're here to talk about what happened at Doklam. There seemed to have been, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, there seems to have been a stand down from Indian Chinese forces over this sliver of territory in Bhutan. Could you explain what happened? What exactly went on?
Sure. This started off in mid-June when it became clear that there had been some Chinese road construction in the Tri-Junction area on the Doklam Plateau into an area that was considered disputed between India, China, and Bhutan, that Indian forces then stopped that construction, that there had been some, we don't know the details yet, that even before that point, there had been some activity involving the Bhutanese and Chinese, but that at that point that Indian soldiers stopped that construction and there was an impasse and a standoff, and then China built up forces. The reason we know about all of this is that the Chinese foreign ministry issued a statement later in June, on the same day that President Trump and Prime Minister Modi were meeting in Washington, and unusually made this border situation quite public. There have been a number of incidents at the boundary. India and China don't usually make it this public unless it leaks. But this was clearly an effort to publicize this event and put pressure for India to withdraw its troops. Just briefly, the Chinese demanded that Indian troops unilaterally withdraw without preconditions, and that without that withdrawal, there would be no negotiations. The Indians wanted the road construction to stop. The Indians, this involved disputed territory between China and Bhutan. India has a treaty with Bhutan. We don't know. There was clearly coordination and close coordination between Bhutan and India that released their own statements on June 29th and 30th. But we don't know the level of that coordination. But this was done on Bhutanese territory by India. And so at this stage, what we know that has happened, they've clearly been, despite the Chinese statement that there would not be negotiations, it's clear that over the last few weeks there have been negotiations. And yesterday, that is on Monday, we saw a statement first from the Indian Foreign Ministry saying that there had been a disengagement. The Indians had also talked about a simultaneous or at least a withdrawal one after the other. And so we saw a statement from the Indians saying there'd been a disengagement. And then the Chinese announced, and the foreign ministry spokesperson announced, that there had been an Indian withdrawal of troops. What we don't know, there's a lot we don't know. There's still a lot of unknowns, and some of which will remain unknowns. And I think that's the way it should be. The most important fact is that the situation has de-escalated and been resolved diplomatically. But I think it's interesting that both the statements that came out from both sides as a result of the negotiations from China and India, the statements were vague enough, they were ambiguous enough, deliberately so, that it left a lot to interpretations. Both sides could claim victory, and both sides emphasized different aspects.
It does seem that China felt that it you know, clearly made the wrong bet and really thought India would actually back down when it wouldn't. The Chinese tried to drive a bit of a wedge between India and its ally Bhutan. I mean, there's obviously a lot, as you said, we don't know, but how successful were they in this crisis of sort of driving a wedge between these two countries?
So I think in terms of surprises or miscalculations, the way I see this is that there were three surprises in the first few weeks. I think the first surprise was the one the Chinese got when, from what we know, they did not anticipate that there would be this kind of Indian reaction to the road building. The Indian reaction was because it's a sensitive geographic area, but there is also a sense that not just in the India-China border, but throughout the Chinese border regions, including in the South China Sea, that Chinese construction has been used to create facts on the ground. So they decided to take a strong stance. I think the second surprise was one that India got, which is the Chinese making this a situation very public, which was unusual, and really going on a full court press in terms of its official media, in terms of trying to put pressure on India. And I think this third surprise was on the Chinese part, that this pressure did not result in India backing down. I think we are yet to find out what the medium-term impact on the Bhutan-India relationship is. I think China, the Bhutanese clearly did not want to be stuck in the middle. Having said that, this is territory that they dispute, that is disputed between them and China. They could not have confronted the Chinese on their own. They would have coordinated this closely with India. So in one sense, the mechanisms between Bhutan and India have worked. Having said that, I think this will raise questions and has raised questions in Bhutan about the Bhutan-India relationship. What those questions will lead to, I think, will partly depend on how India handles the Bhutan-India situation moving forward. The Chinese, on their part, might succeed in getting more of a relationship out of this with Bhutan if there's a sense in Bhutan that the kind of relationship and what some might see as kind of India setting preferences that the Bhutanese don't necessarily share about a number of issues, including its foreign relations, that they want to push back against that.
Could you speak, and this is a part where our listeners might want to take a look at a map, but could you speak to why Bhutan occupies such important geography from India's perspective?
Sure. Bhutan, which was never part of British India or kind of the British colonial part of the British Empire, has kind of remained separate. It's always been kind of one of the Himalayan kingdoms that has remained separate from kind of what was considered the rest of India. It's a key factor is its geographic location. It is sandwiched between China to its north and India to its south. It is right next to Sikkim, which till the 70s was an independent kingdom as well. And on the other side, it has Northeast India. So it's, and on the other side of Sikkim is Nepal. So there's this key area. And the border that India, that Bhutan has with China is with Tibet. And so it's kind of a very sensitive area for the Chinese. It is just next the northeast part of India that is that India holds and claims and governs, that is to Bhutan's east, is territory that China claims. And so it's kind of sandwiched between these two countries. It has remained unlike, say Nepal. It has remained in a very unique relationship with India. It is far closer to India than Nepal has been, not just in terms of the treaty, which was signed decades ago, but was revived a couple of decades ago. It engages and coordinates closely with India on its foreign relations, something China has been trying to change. China wants to make further inroads. They do some business with Bhutan, companies do through various mechanisms, but they do want to try to kind of open up Bhutan, so to speak.
And last question, there were a couple particularly dramatic episodes that caught a lot of attention, especially on social media during this border crisis. I mean, as you had these troops standing off each other, there was a full-blown fistfight between Chinese and Indian troops. How normal is that? Are we in a position to judge if that's something that commonly happens in these border disputes? There just happened to be video of this one.
I think you have that right. We don't know how often it happens. And one of the reasons is that they usually, the two countries do not there's definitely not video of it, but they don't even usually talk about these scuffles or kind of these incidents. You'll sometimes see kind of numbers of, and the countries are careful, there's large sections of the boundary that are undemarcated, so they won't use the word incursion, they use the word transgression, or at least India does. And so we don't know how often this happens. What was noticeable, though, I think about that video, I think one was that it leaked, and from what had been at least up till then a fairly leak-proof kind of few weeks, particularly from the Indian side, we did see an Indian media outlet get this video. And the second thing was that it involved that these were not armed soldiers. And I think that was something that was striking, that suggested that the two sides did share a common goal of not wanting this to escalate, seeing that they basically had their fists, and in one case, a kick, but there weren't weapons involved. And I think that was, I think, reassuring to some of us who were looking at that closely.
And the other thing that sort of struck me was the Chinese released this very sort of bizarre piece of propaganda that I don't know how else to show up, but showed a lot of racial contempt that from China towards India.
Yes, it was the Seven Sins video, and what was interesting about it is that it was put out by Xinhua, the not kind of the Global Times, but an official news agency. I think two things were striking about that. I think one, it was reflective of something I think Indians and India hasn't experienced before with China, that other Chinese neighbors who it has disputes with have, the Japanese in particular, but at times the Koreans, the Vietnamese, which is this kind of barrage of kind of public, kind of psychological warfare, I guess. I'm not sure I'd count this video as such, because I think it actually, there was a bit of a backlash against the Chinese for it because of those racial, not just undertones, but stereotypes. But what it showed, I think, was it was reflective of this broader kind of effort on the part of the Chinese in a way that India hasn't experienced in recent years, of really getting this full court press in terms of Chinese propaganda efforts against it, not just propaganda efforts, but the use of attempted use of economic coercion, like travel advisories to dissuade Chinese tourists to visit. So to use economic pressure potentially, and we don't know if there's a link, ceasing to share hydrological data with India as it's supposed to do, so that there's flood control vis-a-vis the Brahmaputra River. But the second thing I think this is reflective of, given that even the way the people in this video were talking to each other showed very little knowledge of India and Indians, but this is mutual. The two countries, for countries that have shared a border now for many, many years and a long border, they don't know very much about each other. They are some of the least connected countries. For two countries that are neighbors and are developed, there are barely still any direct flights between them. If you compare the number of people from India who go to China and vice versa, and compare India and the U.S., it is vastly different. So it's just, they're two countries who, peoples who don't know very much about each other. And so it's very easy to kind of get into these stereotypes, and there's not much of a connection. I think this sometimes is part of the problems in terms of not being able to understand each other's perspectives, and potentially actually miscalculate about how the other one's going to react.